Chapter 40 Continued. Avoiding any further discussion with Blair, I left the Brightleaf offices in studio-rich Burbank and met Simon within the hour for coffee at a little place on Century Park East. The location had been Simon's choice and was a far cry from the IT clubs and the million-dollar Vista venues he normally recommended to impress me that Simon Caldwell Hunter could swing with the best of them. I surmised that Simon did not want it getting back to Milton that he was meeting with me so soon after I had been fired. He was sitting outside when I arrived, at a sidewalk table beneath a red umbrella. I stepped in and ordered a latte, and then joined him. A steady stream of pedestrians passed us in both directions on the sidewalk. A phalanx of metal newspaper kiosks lined the other side of the sidewalk, beyond which the traffic was unrelenting. On the other side of the street, a team of men in orange vests were jackhammering up the concrete. We were alone in a maelstrom of sound and activity.
"I am sorry about Milton, Tills," he said. His lean face was tense with discomfort.
He tugged a little at the knot in his tie as I sat. He squirmed in his chair as if his Brooks Brothers was suddenly too small.
"Really?"
"We've covered that," I said, sipping. "Now, tell me something I don't know."
"Have you found a new agent? I've got some names for you. Good ones. We're not supposed to do that, but what Milton doesn't know..."
"Simon, if you don't quit stalling..."
"Right."
He drank from his cup and watched the traffic.
"I received a call this morning from an editor over at Glitterags. Having no reason to believe otherwise, he called because his research showed CTR as your agent. He asked for Milton, but he's off golfing with the new head of projects over at Paramount. So Cynthia gave the call to me." "The editor, his name is Greg Chambliss, was looking for a comment on a story they're running in the next edition. Glitterags is a weekly, so on Friday, it will be in one of those boxes."
Simon pointed to the row of newspaper kiosks.
"He said he has good sources claiming there is a sex video circulating, and that you're on it in living color."
"Me and who else?"
"Golden Boy," he said.
"Zach? No way. No way, Simon."
"He said Glitterags doesn't have it, and he hasn't seen it. But they are writing about it in their weekly roundup section. He said the buzz is too strong to ignore."
"Oh, give me just a small break. Too strong to ignore? I don't make sex videos, Simon. It's just gossip trash from a third-rate tabloid. I'll admit, I'm relatively new at this game, but I know enough that chasing this kind of thing is like chasing your own tail. It's crap. They're just looking for a new angle on an old story."
"That's basically what I told him, right before I hung up on him."
So,
not 15 minutes later, I got a call from Diana Skimmer. She works on media relations for Cecil Abrams. She said that she had just been contacted by a guy who claimed to be a stringer for an unnamed network affiliate. She said he claimed to be in possession of the tape. Or I guess it's not really a tape, it's a digital flash drive or something. Anyway, He told Diana that he bought it for an undisclosed sum and was prepared to sell it to Abrams for $50,000. He said he thought that was a small price to pay to keep Price Point off the tabloid sleaze circuit. He told her that he would be contacting the media organizations next.
What did she tell him?
To sod off.
Good, I said.
But then, she got two other calls. One from Glitterags and one from a Fox 11 news reporter. Diana said it sounded like they were both working off the same contact. The Glitterags call was essentially the same one I received. He's got nothing but a story about a possible story. But the guy at Fox 11 said he had seen the video and that it was clearly you and clearly Zach and plenty.
Simon stopped on a dime, as though he had just realized to whom he was talking. I watched the color rise in his face like a human thermometer. What?
Well, raw.
I can't believe this. Fox 11 is paying for celebrity skin films?
They deny paying anything.
What? Someone is out there just giving it away? After asking for $50,000?
Got me, said Simon. All I know is that they're going with the story tonight. Grainy face shots only, but enough to verify the story.
This is news? Really? People having sex?
In this town?
Simon smiled sadly.
Come on, Tills. There's more.
Shit. What?
As Diane was giving a no comment to Fox 11, another call was holding.
Who?
Danny Blum, Zach's agent. They got the same call.
What is Zach saying?
That it's a load of crap, that it's a shakedown. Blum was in full damage control mode, trying to orchestrate a coherent response.
Did he call you?
I called him, after I ended with Diane. He was out, and I left a message. Turns out Blum was not returning my call because he and Zach's lawyer were over at Fox 11 trying to shut the whole thing down. Fox consented to show them what they had, but they're going ahead with the story. When he finally called me, he said there was not much they could do. The report will include a statement from Zach's people that they believe the video has been faked and that they will be seeking a criminal investigation. But Blum let on that all that was just bluster. He thinks the video is real. The studio lawyers are involved. I think the strategy is to hunker down, starve the story, and let the storm pass.
What about me? What are we saying? Simon looked down at the table and then up again. Wincing. I forgot, I said. There is no we. I'm recently unrepresented.
I tried. Milton's not getting anywhere near this one.
Big surprise. He's been thrown clear in the nick of time.
Yes, he said. Uncanny. That one. What are you going to do?
The jackhammers across the street stopped, as if the men in the orange vests were also interested in the answer. What can I do? I said, not expecting a response. We drank coffee and watched the traffic. I guess I'm going to call Zach and find out what the fuck is going on. He called twice this morning while I was in a meeting with the new cast. I guess I should have picked up. He never calls me. I should have known it was important. Then I guess I'll tune in for the show on Fox 11. Tomorrow I'll start my day by calling my mother and warning her away from all media. Then I'll have some lunch, and after that, I'll kill myself.
Not funny, he said.
I never said it was.
Tills, this will pass, he said, clasping my hand. We'll laugh about this someday, you and me. You'll be a major star, and I'll own my own agency. And we'll meet every Wednesday for drinks and pasta at Toscanova, and we'll laugh about this little coffee of ours here on this side of the street with the traffic and the concrete demolition crew. We'll laugh. I promise.
I know. I'm more pissed than anything. If this video is real, then I'm going to kill Zach West.
Go ahead and get the bail money ready, and I'll need some legal talent. Find out what Johnny Cochran is up to. Wait, too late for Johnny. Call Robert Blake's guy.
Still not funny, he said severely.
I smiled as warmly as my mood allowed and stood to leave. You're a sweet man, Simon. Thanks for doing what you can. I hugged him. Unusual for me, and he knew it. I was never a hugger in my younger days. But I felt affection for him and gratitude for his loyalty. He pulled me in close and tucked his chin over my shoulder, nestling it around the nape of my neck like a lovesick swan with expensive taste in cologne. I suspect he was feeling suddenly free of his professional conflict of interest, the obvious silver lining in losing me as a client.
Call me any time, Tills, he said, day or night.
I gave him a firm pat on the back and pried myself free. When I got to my car, I dialed Zach's number. It rang over to voicemail, and I left a message asking for him to call me back as soon as he could. I sat, watching traffic and wondering what to do next. I decided that home was as good a place as any since I did not have anything else scheduled for the afternoon. Price Point was officially entering its post-production phase, which for an action blockbuster could be expected to last for several months. And while I would certainly be called in for looping, that sort of work would not start for another week or two. The Lion Tree, meanwhile, was not yet off the ground. Brightleaf was still working on recontracting the labor, and Blair had yet to finalize the shooting schedule. I might have called some of my friends, but most of them were working, and those that were not working would have taken more emotional energy than I had to give. What I really wanted was to be alone. I started the car and headed for home. My cell rang before I hit Santa Monica Boulevard. I spoke without looking. Zach?
No. Blair. But thanks for getting us confused, Tilly John. Good for my ego.
Sorry. I was expecting Zach.
I'll bet you were.
You've heard, I said.
I'm told we just got a call from a Mr. Shambliss at Glitter Something.
Glitterags.
So, you know about this?
He asked. Yes.
How long have you known?
What time is it? That's why Simon was calling.
I thought he was calling to fire you, he said, confused.
Milton took care of that, by letter.
You're better off without him,
said Blair in his take-charge director's voice.
I'll get you some names. You can do better than those clackers. So what's this all about, Tilly? Tell me it's just more tabloid shit about you and Zach.
Partly right, I said.
Which part?
It is about me and Zach.
You mean it's not just tabloid shit?
Doesn't sound like it.
No.
Fox 11 is running something tonight. Zach's agent has seen it. Sounds like the real thing.
There was an empty wind in my ear.
Blair? Can you...
Christ, Tilly John! Are you saying this is real? You and Zach, actually.
Blair? Listen, I don't know, okay? I don't fucking know. This is less than a couple of hours old for me. I haven't spoken with Zach. I don't know what's going on.
Well, did you or didn't you?
Did I or didn't I what, Blair? Fuck Zach West? Yes, with abandon. Record it for posterity? Not to my knowledge. Is that good enough for you?
This is the last thing I need, Tilly.
The last thing you need? Fuck you, Blair.
The last thing we need.
Too late.
Do you have any idea how Angus will react to... Christ.
To Ivanova, reality porn queen?
I was almost shouting.
Yes,
said Blair.
Fuck Angus. He needs to grow up and live in the real world for 10 minutes. No one forced him to option that story. He doesn't have to be involved in this movie. But he did, and he is. So he needs to stop being so fucking fragile.
This is bad, Tilly John. You wowed him this morning. But we're gonna lose him.
So let him go,
I said, not meaning it.
That's not the way it will work,
he said.
Yeah, I said ruefully. I know. I gotta go, Blair.
Who do I talk to at Fox 11?
I don't know. Call Zach's guy, Danny Blum. He seems to know the most.
Keep me posted,
he said. I hung up, without confirming or denying that I intended to keep him posted about anything. The traffic was maddening. The drivers in front of me were indecisive and dawdling. Those behind me were needlessly aggressive and cantankerous, passing me with revving engines and irritated eyes. By the time the road elbowed into West Hollywood, I was thoroughly upset with everyone for complicating my life. At Santa Monica and La Brea, 4 black and white patrol cars, lights flashing, had converged under the date palm swaying over the sidewalk outside a Starbucks. Drivers slowed, camera phones at the ready, rubbernecking to see if somebody famous was involved. Traffic crept into a snarl, backing up for a block and a half. Uniformed police stood in knots of 2 and 3, speaking all too leisurely. My phone rang.
Tilly?
Zach!
Sorry, he said. I couldn't pick up.
What the fuck is going on?
I tried to call.
I was in a meeting with Blair. What
is going... Calm down, Tilly.
Calm down? I keep talking to people telling me that I'm about to spread my legs on the 11 o'clock news. Don't tell me to calm down. Is this true?
Yes, he said. I think it is. I mean, I think it's a real video.
How the hell?
I don't know. Take a chill pill, Till.
I heard laughter in the background. Clever, Zach, I said. So much rhyming. Who's there?
Sloan, he said. And Davis.
And how stoned are you?
Not enough.
Terrific. Where was the camera?
The beach house. The bedroom.
What bedroom? I asked.
The master.
And you filmed us?
No. I didn't know anything about it.
Then who, Zach? How?
I don't know.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. Danny got me a copy.
What's the angle? I asked.
What do you mean?
The camera. Where was it?
I told you.
Where in the bedroom, Zach?
Like, I don't know. From the top shelf of the etagere, I think.
And you're telling me that you had no knowledge of any camera?
No. Tilly. Look, I'm really sorry, okay? I don't know how this happened.
I could hear the lie in his voice. In my mind, I saw his face on the ride back from the birthday party up in Laurel Canyon. I was stupidly laughing in wonder at the reporter pretending to clip the hedges outside my aerobics class, asking about Zach's supposed tryst with Maria Beckwith. How ridiculous that notion was to me. Maria Beckwith. And Zach laughing with me as he casually pulled the wheel this way and that way, serpentining our way along Mulholland Drive above Hollywood proper. I remember how hard I had had to work to pull the truth out of him. How doggedly he had evaded me, trying everything he could think of to lead me astray until only the truth was left. Then, and only then, when there was no place left to go, did he finally come clean. And now, he was lying again. Stoned off his ass and lying to me. Whatever his reasons, he had set up a video camera to capture the action. And now that video had fallen into the wrong hands. And Zach was running for cover. I was so angry I could scream. How many more are there? I spat.
What? More what?
Videos.
None. I mean, I don't know.
Tilly, you don't know? How did this one get out? Did you pass it around to the fucking Zach pack? To Sloan and Davis and Tiki and all the others?
No. Tilly.
I could hear the hurt in his voice. Softer now. As if he did not want whoever was with him to hear.
Tilly. I swear. I'm so sorry. I mowed over his words.
Is this how you guys unwind these days, Zach? Open a six-pack and watch your old girlfriend do whatever it takes to get you off? Do you know what this does to me, Zach? Do you get that this shit makes you a stud and me a whore?
Tilly.
Traffic slowed to a stop. The rental minivan behind me slammed into me, shoving my car forward. I slammed on the brakes to keep from hitting the car in front of me, which brought my chest violently up against the steering wheel. The cracked ribs that had marked the beginning of my relationship with Zach reintroduced themselves in a flash of pain. It was a 6 mile per hour collision, but enough to honk my horn and catapult my phone from my hand onto the dash. I cursed and grabbed the phone, put the car in park, and got out to inspect the damage. The minivan had had its way with the left back end of my Miata. It looked like it was made of blue tinfoil. The man behind the wheel appeared terrified. Zach was in mid-sentence, still trying to explain himself, oblivious to the situation on my end of the phone. Zach! Zach, listen! Zach! Stop talking! Shut up! Just shut up! I'm hanging up now. I can't even talk to you. Find a way to get this video off the street. If it hasn't already gone viral. This is a new low, Zell. I'm really disappointed in you. I really thought we were friends. I think I'm sorry I ever met you. I hung up and tore into the petrified tourist driving the minivan. My ribs, though tender, were fine. The Miata would definitely need shop work, but it was nothing that could not be fixed. He had simply rear-ended the wrong person on the wrong day, at precisely the wrong time for all the wrong reasons. His wife and children cowered in their seats, too scared to point their tiny personal cameras at me. I saw myself in their stupefied, stricken, star-struck gaze. The other cars navigated around us slowly. Motorists, looking to see if someone famous was involved. I watched the evening news, standing up from across the room, remote control in my hand, as though it barely warranted my attention. As though I was trying to find the button that would turn it off. The truth was that my body was filling with cold dread, like a basement letting in the flood. The anchors teased the segment through 3 commercial breaks, and I was forced to stand behind my couch pretending, through the sports and the weather, not to care about what was coming. I tried to console myself that at least they had decided not to make my pornographic debut the lead story, knowing that it really made very little difference. It did not matter how they reported the story, how seriously they presented it, or how prominently they positioned it in the lineup. Once the story was out, it would take on a life of its own, feeding on itself, metastasizing and gaining strength. Presumably owing to the legal pressure exerted by squadrons of studio lawyers throughout the day, Fox 11 reported the story in a humorous, eye-rolling, decide for yourself if you really have nothing better to do, tone, working it into the mindless banter between the entertainment desk and the news desk.
Well, Kathy, John, make of this what you will. But it seems that Hollywood's latest megastar, Zach West, just may be looking to work on both sides of the camera. Rumors have surfaced that West and his on-again, off-again girlfriend and co-star, Tilly Johns, have made a sexually explicit home video. I want to be quick to add here that representatives for the stars have insisted that, while they have heard the rumors and that there is a video circulating, the video is just a clever fake made by pranksters looking to stir up attention. Daniel Blum is an agent for Mr. West. It's a shame, really, that this sort of thing has become such a standard part of show business. Zach is a professional, and he knows that frauds like this come with the territory, and he can only hope that his fans will think twice before they believe everything they hear or see. The digital age has been a boon for those looking to profit from fakery and fraud. Needless to say, we are not happy about the situation, and we will be pursuing a criminal investigation. Now, Kathy and John, Fox 11 has tried to obtain comment from the stars themselves, but those requests were denied. Zach West and Tilly Johns are co-starring in the Darnell Lewis Cecil Abrams blockbuster Price Point, due out sometime next year. Followers of West and Johns will recall that they became a romantic item early in the production and then broke it off, dashing rumors of a possible marriage after allegations surfaced that one or both of them had been unfaithful. While it would seem that the Price Point production has continued unaffected by the romantic sideshow of its co-stars, these latest allegations of a graphic sex video might just overshadow the release of the film itself. Representatives of the Price Point production team were contacted, but declined to comment for this story. My guess is that this is one time the masters of make-believe are hoping that seeing is not believing. Kathy, John.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Mark. I guess we'll stay tuned. And finally, tonight...
I turned off the television and stared at the blank screen. My cell phone trilled from my purse in the hall, like a trapped bird wanting to be free. I let it ring. I knew the broadcast could have been much worse. The station's own lawyers had clearly advised against any mention that Fox 11 had possession of the video, that they had examined it, and that they had formed an opinion as to its authenticity or the identity of the actors. They had also clearly decided against posting any still photos from the actual video, relying instead on the same professional headshots of me and Zach to tell this story that they had used to tell every other story relating to our on-again, off-again romantic sideshow. Rumor regurgitation was gutless, but it was safe. The bird in the leather cage started up again. Blair, I suspected. Or Zach. Or any number of my friends who had tuned into the news with no idea of what was coming. Electronic birds all over the city were chirping excitedly with the news. Somewhere, a computer histogram showed sudden sharp spikes in cell phone traffic, the digital age measurement of spontaneous social cohesion, displacing the Super Bowl halftime toilet flush. Fox 11's omission of serious tone and confirmatory detail did not have the salutary impact on my emotions or my churning stomach that it might have. Like a tongue feeling for the missing tooth, my thoughts searched out Angus Mann, pushing him away and finding him again, projecting his image on the dark screen across the room. I imagined him sitting in his hotel, watching Mark and Kathy and John of the Fox 11 news team bubble on about Colonel Elena Ivanova's new raunchy sex video. Ivanova. For that was how Angus would hear it. I had connected with Angus that morning, in every way that mattered. Intellectually, viscerally. Blair had seen it, and I had felt it. For the first time, I felt like Angus understood that it had to be me, that she, Ivanova, was safe with me. For the first time, I felt like Angus wasn't doing me any favors, nor deferring to Blair's questionably motivated casting choice. I was the one.
the only one. I understood that Ivanova has a certain dignity, as Blair had put it. But now, the bird was screeching at me. Angus would see now that he had been silly and naive in the Brightleaf Studios conference room. He had allowed himself to believe what Blair and I wanted him to believe. He had been temporarily seduced by momentum and convenience into doubting what he had always been inclined to believe about me in the first place. He had forgotten that he was still in the opium den of Hollywood, and he had breathed deeply. But now I would be fired. Again, I would be back on the outside looking in. Blair would try to save me, but he would fail. He had nothing left with which to bargain for my retention. Nothing, that is, save his ultimate authority to make his movie in any way he wanted, with whomever he wanted. But for all of Blair's failings, and there were many, a lack of loyalty to the integrity of his movies was not one of them. When it came to The Lion Tree, Angus Mann's approval of the finished product, or at least his acceptance, however grudging, was integral. I, on the other hand, was anathema. Ivanova was lost to me. As painful and as infuriating as that realization was, as I stared at the dead black face of the television and listened to the phone behind me in its excited networked frenzy, I knew that it was not the most disconcerting feeling pumping in and out of my heart. Strangely, my greatest sadness came from the disappointment that I imagined in the heart of Angus Mann. I knew that beneath whatever anger and frustration he was surely feeling at that moment, confined to the top of some gleaming tower, high above the smoldering Hades of Los Angeles, he felt something worse, something sharper and deeper and more enduring. He felt a loss. He felt disappointment. And the name of that loss and that disappointment was Matilda Johns. His name for the woman who might have, who could have, but who did not live up to his expectations. It was an odd thing for me to lament Angus's disapproval. Simply imagining it should have given me that old secret thrill, as it had before. That quiet rush of confirmation in my veins that I was alive and moving under my own conscious will. That sweet siren song of rejection. But now, I simply felt sad, marooned. I felt grief and all its domed and barren solitude. Angus Mann's loss was my own. I should have liked to believe that in the greater arc of my professional and personal development, I had reached my nadir. In fact, I did think so. If my life in the wake of the Peppermint Grove premiere had been at its zenith, then my life in the wake of the Fox 11 news broadcast was surely at its lowest. It felt much worse than not having any money and living in a roach-infested postage stamp apartment in Monterey Park. It felt worse than writing for the LAQ.
It felt worse than slopping overpriced California cuisine at Gomp's. Worse than prostituting myself for toothpaste and mouthwash. Worse than aspiring to be a professional corpse on LA nights. It felt worse than my sexual and cinematic misadventures with the late great Rufus Einemann. It felt worse than cracked ribs. Worse than Maria Beckwith. The tears I shed that night were, in one sense, inexplicable when measured against the reality of a sex video, a mere snack for the Hollywood appetite for stars behaving badly. And yet, in another sense, those tears and the grief behind them had been building a very long time, and they came with a force that confused and scared me. For the first time since leaving home, I felt that if either of my parents were to call and offer me my old room back, I would have been on the next plane to Columbus. I had a bizarre urge to call my father. Not to say anything to him, or for him to say anything to me. Not to talk at all. Just to hear him on the other end of the phone, there, breathing, listening for me, caring, giving a damn, still giving a damn. Of course, wretchedness is a state of mind lacking any reasonable perspective on the future. Stasis becomes the only blessing and the only curse. Life, say the wretched, will never get any better. Life, say the wretched, cannot possibly get any worse. And that was how I felt that night, sobbing against the back of my couch until I thought I might die in a sea of attention, of loneliness. And irrelevance. Things would not get any better for me. And they could not possibly get any worse. But, like the wretched generally, I did not know how terribly, terribly wrong I was.